This is the Adam Carriker Show.
Position right of the quarterback, out of the shotgun, first and 20. Jailbreak screen in the air. It is tipped. It is intercepted by Carriker at the Missouri 21-yard line.
Live from the heart of Lincoln, America, eight-year NFL vet and All-American defensive lineman Adam Carriker.
Shotgun snap to Everidge. He's got the left arm going, and now he's got a whole lot of Adam Carriker, who rips it down inside the 25-yard line.
On 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com, here is your host, Adam Carriker.
Yes, it is time for the Adam Carriker Show here on 93.7 The Ticket. I'm Jake Bachman. He is Nick Sander filling in for the first hour. Adam will be here at noon. But we got plenty to talk about, as we usually do, coming off a weekend of jam-packed sports. Unfortunately, of course, didn't include Nebraska. We have to do these things called bye weeks, I guess, during football season, and just kind of meander around and do what you can do. Did you make anything out of the bye weekend, Nick?
Not Nebraska-centric. However, I will say that at least we were gifted with top matchups during a Nebraska bye week, though.
Yes.
Like, it would be 10,000 times worse if it was like, all right, Nebraska doesn't play, but also, man, there's only two top 25 matchups. These are all real bad matchups this entire weekend. No, that wasn't the case last week. You had some really good football games, especially in the SEC. Especially in the SEC.
Yeah. And how are you coming along with the SEC battle of the Big Ten? Do you feel, you know, there's always that argument.
I should be asking you this.
Yeah,
because you're a massive Big Ten stan. How did it feel watching your beloved Hawkeyes lose to Indiana on Saturday?
It was tough. I thought they were going to win.
I thought they were going
to
win.
With that interception there at the end. But it's Iowa football. You know they're going to find a way to make it ugly. I mean, they might win. And then the most Iowa football thing ever, Indiana. They get a safety at the end because Indiana ran back 40 yards to prevent anything else from happening. It's hard to understand what's going on. They didn't want to punt back to Indiana or Iowa.
I get that. I say it over and over, and I need to get a t-shirt that revolves around Kurt Cignetti, and I just need to keep on saying I hate how much I like him. Like, I have completely turned the ship around on how I feel about Kurt Cignetti. Like, I want that.
Oh, yeah.
There's got to be something. Think about Indiana football two seasons ago. Mm. We didn't talk about them. They are a weekly conversation across national sports radio. Across national sports radio, Indiana football is a conversation piece.
It really is miraculous. And again, one of the craziest things that I've seen, having watched college football my entire life, see Indiana rise, and it appears again not to just be a fluke.
Yeah.
Appears to be, you know, stably set. Now, he's a little bit older. Otherwise, I mean, I think just everybody would be coming after him. I still think there's going to be quite a line of folks lining up at his door this offseason to try to see what it would take to get him out of Bloomington into their school. But it really is incredible. That story. I mean, he's got a long way to go to be like a Bill Snyder or something like that, because, you know, Bill Snyder stuck around Kansas State and continued that for decades. But that's kind of what it reminds you of, is somebody taking a school that is just the absolute nothing of college football and turning it around. And it's kind of funny, though, too, because I know you get this all the time, reading the text line. Is, well, if he can do it, why can't Matt Rhule do it?
Exactly.
And that's what every head coach in the country is hearing from their athletic directors, hearing from fans about the success of Kurt Cignetti and what he's been able to do. It's really probably, I think, you know, coaches in general are probably tired of hearing him, but it is interesting to follow through the can you stand him type, because he's kind of a guy that rubs everybody the wrong way unless you're on his team. You know, we say that about players all the time, but He's kind of like that as a coach, and obviously drubbed Nebraska, said as much later on in ESPN appearances. And so some Nebraska fans are starting to, you know, didn't like that or didn't necessarily appreciate that.
Exactly.
But it was just straightforward. He said he kicked their ass. He did. I mean, what do you want him to say? He's going to have to say the same thing, about Illinois.
I mean, this is something to where. So just going back, 2021, they were 2-10, 0-9 in the conference. 2022, 4-8, 2-7 in the conference. 2023, 3-9, 1-8 in the conference. Their wins were over Indiana State, and then in a 4-overtime game, they beat Akron 29-27 in 4 overtimes.
We kind of know what that Akron program's like, too.
And then Kurt Cignetti gets there in 24, and they win. They win 11 in his first year, and so far in 2025, they're 5-0 and 2-0 in the conference with wins 63-10 over number 9th ranked Illinois at the time, and then out on the road in Kinnick at Iowa. Mm. I mean, it's just hard to everything he says, and you can come after him for the non-conference slate. You can come after him for all of that. It's you just can't discredit anything he says. You just can't.
Yeah,
because he wins.
It's crazy.
And you can say if there's one thing we know about whether it's players, whether it's coaches, and it can be about the way they talk, the way they operate, the way they carry themselves. You overlook a lot when you start winning games, and he can say whatever he wants. And people allow him to. Why? Because on Saturdays, when it matters, he wins.
Well, and it's also just interesting, you know, sometimes you got a guy on one side of the ball that has figured something out offensively or whatever, and so their offense puts up a bunch of numbers, or defensively, they hold everybody down. Indiana's on both sides of the ball. Like, this is a complete team, and they kind of showed it as much in the last 2 weeks, right? They can score 63 if they need to, or they can hunker down and win a game against Iowa, right? Tough place to play. You can make fun of Iowa all you want, but
it is
a lot of places. A lot of teams struggle to put up 20, 30, especially 30 points on Iowa. So that's the kind of game they played. And Iowa, you know, Indiana was able to win. And then to reflect even better on them, Illinois beat USC 34-32.
Yeah. So, and it's the other part is also that they're doing this in year one of a new offensive coordinator. Last year, it was Tino Sunseri. Mm-hmm. Tino ends up going to UCLA in the offseason, left Indiana. And after a successful year, leaves Indiana after last season and goes to be the offensive coordinator at UCLA after Bieniemy got fired. UCLA's now without a head coach, and Deshaun Foster's fired, and Tino Sunseri's now at UCLA. UCLA's fine offensively, not good by any means. Certainly not what Indiana was, but that it's the perfect perfect example of program bigger than any one person, any one coach. And at the end of the day, If you can't do the job or you don't want to do the job, Kurt Cignetti was able to go out and fire and find Coach Shanahan to now be their offensive coordinator. And now here you go. It's just you didn't even skip a step.
And you mentioned UCLA. It wasn't the biggest game in the afternoon,
no,
but it was interesting in that they lost 17-14 to Northwestern. Of course, Nebraska has both those teams on their schedule down the line. The problem now for UCLA is there's not a game left they can win, really.
No.
They've got Penn State at Michigan State. We'll see Michigan State this week. Probably not going to happen there. Maryland at Indiana, Nebraska, as we know, at Ohio State, Washington at USC. UCLA is almost, I would say, almost likely at this point.
Are they going to go 0-12? They
probably will go 0-12. We've seen Washington do that before, if you remember, under like Jake Locker's final season or something.
Oh, no way.
But very rarely do you see any power team go 0-12.
So winless Power 4 or Power 5 football teams. I'd love to look. Okay, here we go. List of major college football winless seasons.
Oof.
Okay, here we go. There's actually a lot more than I thought there would be. let's see. Kevin Sumlin. I forgot about that name.
Sumlin went over?
Yeah, in 2025. Yeah, or not 2025, 2020, before he was fired. It was during the pandemic.
Yeah.
Pandemic had a lot of them.
Well, that's fair. They played like 6 or 7 games.
Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
0-9. Derek Mason was 0-8.
Yikes.
Yikes, that is bad. Les Miles in 2020 in the COVID season. Les Miles went 0-9. I love these Wikipedia pages because they're so unhinged. Miles' second and final season at Kansas. Kansas never scored more than 23 points in a game.
Now, they played conference only that year, right?
I mean, throughout the course of the season, the Jayhawks were outscored by their opponents 414-145. 0-9. let's see. Okay. UCF in 2015. Kansas in 2015 went 0-12 under David Beatty.
Oh, my.
They lost to South Dakota State to open the season.
Kansas is showing up on that list quite a bit.
Yeah, they are. Washington. There it is.
There it is. Yeah.
2008. Washington went 0-12 under head coach Ty Willingham.
Yes.
His last season in Washington, quarterback Jake Locker miss the final eight games of the season.
Oh, okay. That's
So that's probably why. Yeah. Oh, this is the best part. In a week two loss to 15th ranked BYU, Locker scored a touchdown to bring Washington to within 28-27, but incurred an excessive celebration penalty, which pushed the extra point attempt back 15 yards, and it ended up being blocked. They would lose that game 28-27, and then eventually lost the Apple Cup to 1-10 overall Washington State. So a really bad one.
I don't know how many people showed up to that game.
Duke went 0-12 and 0-6. Duke had back-to-back winless seasons in 2000 and 2001. All under the same head coach. Carl Franks, in his first season, his first two seasons, started out 0-22.
At Duke?
At Duke.
I've never even heard of that name. That's crazy. I don't know if you ever got a win. I'd fire him. I think you have to fire him after that.
Hold on. No, let's look at Carl Franks. Let me make sure that's his first actual. Because that'd be detrimental if he ends up starting the season. Wait a minute. Is he at Bethune-Cookman? No, he's the running backs coach at Bethune-Cookman. Oh. Yikes. Think about the fall.
He's probably never recovered from that. I used
to be the head coach at Duke. And then it ended up being... Okay, so he got to Duke. They kept him. He got to Duke in 1999, was 3-8. Then in 2000 was 0-11. 2001 was 0-11. 2002, he was 2-10. And 2003, he made it through seven games of the season, was 2-5, and ended up getting fired after seven games. He coached 52 games for the Duke Blue Devils and was 7-45. Oh my. Had a .135 win percentage. That is brutal.
What did they do before? I wonder, like, because that I always thought Scott Frost got like a long leash. I mean, he made it 5 years with his record, but he wasn't 7-45.
All right, so Duke before this. I can't believe we were talking about Duke football.
Shout out Mike Elko. He's getting, or not Mike Elko anymore. He moved on to Texas A&M.
So Fred Goldsmith was the head coach before him, and he got fired from Duke after going 4-7.
Oh, that's they regretted that.
They regretted that. That was their Bull Pelini. Fred Goldsmith is their Bull Pelini.
We didn't know what we had.
We didn't know what four wins really was for us until we had 0-11 in back-to-back seasons. I mean, that's bad. I mean, these are some names for Duke's head coaching. So Steve Spurrier was there in the late 80s. But then it was like Fred Goldsmith, Carl Franks, Ted Roof, David Cutcliffe, who was there from, I mean, forever. Cutcliffe was there from 08 to 2021. And then it was Elko for two seasons, now Manny Diaz. Elko, I'm glad we naturally and organically found a way to talk about Mike Elko, because do you believe in the success that he's having in Texas A&M?
Well, I mean, it's hard not to believe, yeah.
I can't believe it. I did not think that was a very good hire.
You did not. It wasn't a splashy hire. They went with splashy before.
It wasn't a notable name hire.
No. But he won at Duke.
He did, and I guess that's hard to do.
Right. That's why they kind of – that was what was so impressive. I mean, it's worked out well. I don't know. It's interesting you say do you believe in it, because they are 4-0 for the first time since 2016.
Yeah.
But I think they had, like, 13 penalties against Auburn.
Oh,
like,
is that bad?
They've got some things. Like, their red zone offense isn't great. They've got some things to work on. So much to the point that they did. They beat Auburn 16-10, and Mike Elko had to shut down the press conference. Not shut it down, but immediately it was like Brian Kelly from the LSU press conference. He said not to compare it to him, but you guys are asking a bunch of negative questions for us. Like, they're getting into the top five now.
They are. They're sixth in the country. Their quarterback is fine, Marcel Reed.
Yeah, exciting. Sometimes for the wrong reason.
How about this, though? So, I mean, one of the guys that they got from the transfer portal, Kevin Concepcion, who was the transfer from NC State, has had 20 catches already this season. Nate Borkature, though, transfers out of Nebraska, has 4 catches on the year.
Yeah, but that very important
very
one.
Important one.
Yeah.
Is that worth the couple hundred grand that he got?
I would think so.
Yeah. It's crazy. It's crazy to think about this. Texas A&M might be legit. I don't know. I was talking to AD a little bit ago just about the parity of college football is that if you need an example of just the way college football is wild, Virginia beats Florida State. Alabama is able to beat Georgia on the road, but Florida State can beat Alabama. Like it's crazy. And now I think Florida State's better than Virginia. If they play that game 10 times, they probably win it 8 out of the 10 times. But ultimately, I just think that, you know, it's that the parity in college football is as good as we've had it in the last couple of years.
When I watched a lot of Ohio State and Washington too, and obviously Ohio State, the top ranked team beating Texas, they didn't overwhelm. They won 24-6. It wasn't too much of a problem for them, but it's tough to tell. So when you say, like, do you believe in or buy in the SEC or the Big Ten, there's a lot of good teams, there's a lot of solid teams, but is there somebody that's going to run the table or be the obvious choice entering the college football playoffs? I wonder. Obviously, there's going to be favorites. There's going to be, you know, teams that are ranked high.
Yeah.
But is anybody going to make it through this season unscathed? And if they do, like we saw last year with Oregon, how much does that mean with the larger playoff? It's exciting, though. I mean, I think it's a great time for the college football playoff to be in place. And I'm long-standing traditionalist, so I kind of didn't embrace it as much. But for these last couple of years, it's about getting hot at the right time, I think, in the new college football playoff.
I mean, here's what's interesting is, do you remember the last time? And I don't have the answer on this because I think it'd be almost impossible to find it. The last time neither Alabama or Georgia were in the actual top 10. Alabama's 10th, so I guess they're in the top 10. But 1 through 9, Alabama or Georgia wasn't in there. I mean, it's crazy. It's absurd to think about. Because then you look at teams like Miami's back to where they're a top 5 team. Ole Miss is now a top 5 team, right? Because they were able to beat LSU over the weekend. Indiana is in that conversation. It's not like Texas is up there. Texas is 9th. Right? But it's Ohio State, Oregon, Miami, Ole Miss, Oklahoma is back in there.
Tough schedule, too. Let's see what they can do.
Texas A&M, Penn State, Indiana, Texas. That's 1 through 9. No Alabama, no LSU, no Georgia, no Tennessee. It's crazy, the parity.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It makes for a fun week, and it certainly will. Now, did you watch the Virginia-Florida State field storming?
The which one?
The Virginia one.
Yes. Yeah.
That was kind of scary. I think everybody noted on online. It looked like the final play looked like they just kind of swarmed over them. Mm-hmm. So that was
yeah. They were just sitting in the they were like thoughts and prayers are with whoever was in the end zone
right
at the time. I can't remember the name because they just stampeded over them.
Yeah. So it looks scary. I'm glad nothing necessarily came of that, but it's also interesting. I thought in the Ole Miss game, because we were talking about field stormings, Lane Kiffin made a point afterwards saying, we didn't storm the field to beat a top 4 LSU team. They stormed the field last year when they beat us. So it's kind of an interesting times down there in the SEC. Certainly LSU is a historic program, but they haven't been maybe what they were going back to the Joe Burrow days. So, you get excited about that win over Ole Miss last year. But now Ole Miss has beaten LSU, and it's just like, all right, that's what we kind of expect with a backup quarterback, by the way.
How not secure, that's not the right job, but how would you categorize the chances that Lane Kiffin is at Ole Miss next year?
I don't know, because he's been doing so well there for years. I'm kind of surprised he's been there. At some point you would think a top job might come calling, but I think it just depends on, what opens up. And I don't know, you'd have to find a natural fit there. And then there's going to be, there's always some good candidates out there. I'd say it's probably, at this point, I didn't even think about it. I think it's pretty likely he's talked before openly about, they don't have some of the resources and some of the other things that other teams have in the SEC, but man, this is their year. No, and it was, they obviously their quarterback Jackson Dart making a start in the NFL last year. So a lot of people just kind of overlooked him and thought, he probably led them quite a bit. But again, now it Trinidad Chambliss.
Yeah, here we go.
Their backup quarterback, a D2 transfer, has thrown for 300 yards in 3 straight games. They look legit, and maybe the team to take over the SEC.
He played previously, as you mentioned, Ferris State. This just goes to show it still is important to have good coaches. This is, I mean, it shows 1,000%. Is you can get transfers from Bama, from Georgia, from Florida State. You can get the name brands. But if it is ultra important, top of the line, you have to be able to identify and you have to be able to coach. You just have to, because if you don't put in the effort to go and search Ferris State, or you don't go put in the effort to search D2 or FCS programs, and you can't then take them to the next level. This dude was playing D2 last year and now just beat the number 4 team in the country.
Oh, and we know as Nebraska fans too, it is very difficult to get a backup quarterback these days that's pretty good, unless you're paying them pretty well. Yeah. Like Oregon did the Dante Moore.
Yeah.
By the way, Oregon's money helped them win. Dylan Thienemann go out there and get a pick. They bought him from Purdue this
last year. And Dante Moore is good.
And Dante Moore is really good.
He's right? Really good.
But it's really hard to get a backup quarterback. And that's why Nebraska fans are pretty excited, because it looks like they have one.
For now.
So, yeah, but that's the point.
That's the point.
And so, you know, Ole Miss to be in a position to replace your quarterback at the beginning of the season, that'd be a death sentence for a lot of teams, or at least as far as your expectations. So that's really impressive, too. And to your point, kind of speaks to the coaching they've got going on.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
A few thoughts off the text line here. Garage Jeff says, Kurt Cignetti is the new age, more successful Bo Pelini.
I think we don't worry about the nonsense anymore. Like, I think if Bo was the head coach today, like, we wouldn't care about him being the way he was.
Yeah, I always think it's more about the big losses than him blowing up on the sideline and stuff. If you win.
Okay, right, yeah. Okay, that'd be great. Yeah, it's Kurt Cignetti's Bo Pelini. He just wins.
Yeah, there you go. The big games.
Wins the big games.
Yeah, although still wait and see on that. He's in year two, but he's won some big games in any case.
Yeah.
Scott in Minnesota says Northwestern almost went winless in 2022.
Yeah.
Yeah, we all remember that. Their one win over Nebraska.
I really, really hope David Braun is not let go this year.
You got behind the David Braun bandwagon there.
I think he got a really tough hand.
Yeah.
Like, I think he got dealt a really tough hand.
But he did well with it. That's the problem.
And now he's backed up a little bit, you know.
1146 says UCLA Nebraska is going to be close.
It might.
I hope not. But it could be. Hopefully we don't see that.
UCLA Nebraska. Yikes, man.
Especially by then. I just hope not.
There's an avenue. Now, this is not me drinking Kool-Aid. There's an avenue Nebraska is undefeated in October, though.
There is. Well, Nebraska, and that's the other thing.
7-1
with USC losing, they've got one ranked team left on their schedule, and that's Penn State, who also lost.
Are you predicting a Nebraska win against Penn State?
I'm not. I think that they have a... I think it was Austin that put it pretty well. He basically said it's just a mismatch. Rush defense against rushing. Is. Yeah, for Penn State, it's going to be tough to win that one. But we'll see.
They have Drew Aller.
Yeah.
Which means Nebraska has Drew Aller.
Have you been? I mean, that
I'm anti-Drew Aller.
You're anti-Drew Aller.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, I thought
even before the playoff last
year,
anti-Drew Aller.
But it's interesting because all season, all we heard about is Drew Aller and Garrett Nussmeier. And when I turn on the games here, they don't, for as much as Dylan Raiola gets rigged through the coals nationally about not being whatever it is you want him to be, every quarterback kind of has their up and downs. And I mean, those guys, along with Drew, I mean, don't look all that different, at least on Saturday, than Dylan has. And in fact, Dylan's looked better more often than especially what Nussmeier looked like on Saturday.
Here's what is funny. Somebody tweeted out this yesterday talking about what James Franklin said in his post-game press conference. He said, if James Franklin wants, James Franklin claims that he feels like the offense is at its best when it sticks to running the football, and that even includes Drew Aller running the football. However, Penn State's head coach James Franklin, one quote later, said that Drew Aller's got to get the hands and the playmakers more often, and then the ball into the hands of the playmakers more often, especially the wide receivers. Which one is it? The offense just needs to be better.
Yeah.
You need to run the ball better, and you need to pass better.
When I saw it, there was a text in here, and I'm sure you and AD were talking about it. Like, there's no... I understand James Franklin still can't win the big game. I mean, that's been the thing that's holding him back, but what are you going to do? You can't move on from him.
I think that if Florida ends up moving on from Billy Napier, I think James Franklin's a player for the Florida job. Mm. That's kind of what I feel. I think. I think that what will be best for Penn State and for James Franklin is after 12 years, he's been there a long time.
Yeah.
And there's not a whole lot to show for it. Well, in terms of big wins.
Big Ten title, yeah.
Yeah, one Big Ten title with Saquon Barkley and Trace McSorley, Chris Godwin. Like, here's the other side of that, is you had a chance to really springboard off of that year, and they've kind of just stayed neutral every single year since then.
Yeah.
I mean, that was one of the best teams, super underrated. Trace McSorley was good.
Oh, yeah, Trace McSorley's awesome.
He was fun. That Penn State team was really fun to watch.
It is, but I mean, obviously you do think about a guy that stuck around Nebraska for 22 years. Now, to your point, maybe some conference titles, maybe more than James Franklin, but
it's a different era. It was a different era of college football, right? Like,
coaches, 18 conference.
Yeah, coaches get recycled as well. Like, just in day and age, like, okay, sure. Everybody did, like, we had comparisons on the text line when we talked about it. Yeah, to Tom Osborne and stuff, and he didn't win the big ones till late in his career. I understand that, but in those days either, they weren't just recycling through coaches the way they do now. I'm not saying it's good that they do, but that's just how college football is. So I feel like just a clean slate, a clean break. Like, hey, you know what? No, we're not firing you. We're not even telling you to leave. But James Franklin goes, you know what? After 12 years, maybe it's just best if I just go down to Florida.
But again,
Gainesville.
If you're Penn State, what do you transition to there? That's the best
coach
on the open market. And I've seen the idea about Matt Rhule.
No. Not yet.
Not even close, because their problem is they can't win the big game. And Matt Rhule hasn't proven to win.
That's what I said. Like, if Matt Rhule, now we can have this conversation if Nebraska has a 10-win team this year.
Go down and beat Penn State.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, sure. Oh, man. Can you imagine if Nebraska goes to Penn State and beats Penn State? Can you imagine the people?
And Franklin leaves after
then. Maybe. Like, there's a couple of things that have to happen. Most notably, like, Florida has to get rid of Billy Napier first.
Yeah.
But I just think, like, that's a job. But, like, Penn State wouldn't be able to then sway Dabo. Like, they're not going to be able to sway Lanning, but they're comparing themselves and the expectations to those of Oregon and Ohio State. And so now that they see teams like Indiana and Illinois rush into the top 15 consistently, you expect them just to lay down? Like, if Nebraska was in their spot, we would hold them to the expectation and the standard of you expect to compete for championships.
Yeah. As we know as Nebraska fans, just be careful what you wish for. If you're Penn State, top 10 program, maybe they can't get above 8 in that top 10, but they've been there.
90% of college football teams would be thrilled to have James Franklin.
Absolutely.
Penn State views themselves as one of those top 10% teams. Yeah. And so they don't feel great about having James Franklin.
Yeah, we'll see. It's interesting stuff in college football. Another interesting weekend. A coach was fired. We can talk a little bit about that on the other side of it as well. This is Adam Carriker's show here. I'm Jake Bachman, Nick Sander in as well. We'll be back after the break.
There's nothing like being in the stands cheering on your favorite team. Game Time is your hack to unlocking amazing tickets in just a few taps. Plus, their Game Time guarantee means you can trust you'll get 100% authentic tickets at the best price. Fees are always included, so what you see is what you pay. Get the best deals on sports tickets. Download the Game Time app and create an account to start searching for tickets to upcoming games and events. Swipe, tap, ticket, go. Game Time.